A reader lives a thousand lives before he dies. The man who never reads lives only one. Come into the reading room, all you lovers of language and literature. This is the place for those of us who believe that reading is essential as we seek to rise above the ordinary. And the reading room contains a host of extraordinary people, leading lights of the written word. Authors, literary critics, columnists, and ideas people will tantalize your minds with their wordplay while discussing the ideas and worldviews that form our wonderful literary milieu. Come step into a world of magic, the place of undiscovered treasures, a room of reading.
So when it comes to things that are green, well, people are always sitting there and going, yes, I'm a gardener, but I only want to grow vegetables. And oh gosh, my garden must look absolutely 100% spick and span, not a leaf out of place. Fortunately, there are many of us who don't believe that. And I know the late, great Margaret Roberts also was into the whole thing of when is a weed a weed and when is it actually a plant? Well, all plants are plants. That, you know, you call them weeds if they're in the wrong place or you don't want it in your particular space. But on the whole, every single plant has a place in the world, otherwise it wouldn't be there. But sometimes those weeds can be better for you than you can imagine, not just for your garden, but better for you. So one of the things that I think a lot of people watched over the years when it came to cooking shows were the foraging people, okay, people who go foraging for ingredients. We've got Gregory Henderson here in South Africa who does a foraging cooking thing. And then you'd have Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall who would go and see what he could find on the side of the roads. And those are plants, once again, that many people would not see necessarily as weeds, but not as plants that you would use at home. But wild about weeds, okay, is something that I think all of us should be getting into. And this is something that Nikki Brighton has definitely gotten into and brought out this fantastic book, which we're going to be hearing about a bit more. Thanks for joining us, Nikki.
Thank you very much for having me. And I'm definitely wild about weeds.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm like, there's so many things that, you know, people were coming up and saying, oh, you mustn't pull that one out. That's really good and health-giving. And like ashwagandha, for instance, which was like grows on the side of the road and people didn't realize how good it is for you. And now people are getting all of those things and making muti, for want of a better word, on doing that. And I've always thought that, you know, in the past, if you have a food garden and you have stuff like an elder growing in your garden, you know, Sambucus, these are things that you can have as a pharmacy, your backyard pharmacy. So what aspect do you go into when it comes to being wild about weeds? Are you looking at it from the foraging point of view, from the epicurean point of view, from the medicinal point of view? What is the whole gist?
Well, I'm definitely interested in flavor and taste. So that's where it began. I'm a foodie and I like interesting food and I'm a locavore, which means I live very locally and I know everybody who grew every bit of food that I eat. So definitely that's where I came from. But it was quite astonishing once I started exploring this exciting world of weeds to discover that food really is your medicine. Honestly, it is absolutely your medicine. And so I do believe now that whatever is growing all around us at this moment, in this season, in our terroir, as we can call it, is what we should be eating. And that's good for you. The micronutrients, the microorganisms that are, you know, embedded in the plants. I mean, this has got to be, it's food and medicine all rolled into one, and it's free.
And it's free. And of course, it's also part of the slow food movement ethos as well, which is where I came across you from having interviewed Melissa de Bellot, who's like part of the slow food movement too. And I think a lot of people are getting into that. And I will refuse to buy fruit and vegetables from a supermarket which have been imported from somewhere else. To be honest, if it doesn't come within a kind of a couple of kilometers radius, I'd rather not have the food. And it's always the best to go from your garden fork to your kitchen fork and eating it like that. So where do you live actually?
I live in Howick, which is in the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands, which I think is the centre of the universe, because our food
It's God's
here
own
is...
country, you're quite right.
Well, it's off the charts. Our food is amazing here. We have very good small-scale growers. I know the name of the cow I get my milk from. The access to the farmer and the access to good food is absolutely incredible around here. And never mind the abundance. Absolutely, you know, this is the climate of abundance. The soils are good. There's rain and there's heat. And yeah, so that's where I am.
So yeah, I mean, Howick is absolutely stunning. I've been there a lot. And how do you get people involved in it? Because I know there's a lot of people also through the slow food movement who have now started taking people aside and saying, let me help you to grow your own food. But there still is a bit of a cultural resentment in a way from some people. Like, you know, if you live in the northern suburbs in Johannesburg, you can afford to have a food garden and that's your little pretty thing that, oh, look, I grow my own vegetables. Whereas in places like Orange Farm, originally just south of Johannesburg, it was a case of like you were seen to be the poorest of the poor if you were having to grow your own food. So it's trying to get people to understand that the way of actually having healthful food is to grow your own. But then how do you get past that saying, oh, you have to grow your own food because you have no money to go and buy takeaways?
Look, I think we have to accept that aspiration is, you know, a huge part of our culture in South Africa. And I think growing food is quite widely accepted now, particularly after COVID. And I work a lot in Mpopomeni. I did a book a few years ago called Mnandi, which was a taste of Mpopomeni. It was celebrating the cooks and gardeners of that township. And that had all sorts of recipes and lots of gardening tips and all the rest. And I've seen over the years, gardens have really flourished there. And so what I'm trying to do now is to say, don't dig up all the ground and plant Swiss chard and cabbages. Actually eat what's just there, growing all on its own. So now I'm taking it even one step further. It seems to me crazy to do all that work growing cabbages when you could rather just eat probably nutrient dense, I mean, more nutrients than a cabbage. You could rather go dancing or go for a walk for the afternoon. I mean, it's too hot sometimes to garden. So that is definitely a bigger mind shift, I think, than gardening. And that also, I just had a workshop on the weekend, and one woman who's now got a very urban job, she's very smart in communication, and she remembered so much from our workshop. She's like, I remember this. I said, look at you, all these memories are in your bones. You don't have to do much work, you've just got to jiggle the memories up a bit. And she says, yes, but you know, we don't want to eat blackjack anymore because we used to have to eat blackjack. And I completely understand that. But the thing is, once you learn that blackjack has far more nutrients and is much better for you than Swiss chard, surely the shift is just going to come naturally. And I have observed that. People are just shifting. When it's the right time and the right place, then they just make the shift.
Your book itself, though, I mean, you know, you do weed walks and wild lunches in Howick. You've been around the country to do things in different places, because, I mean, obviously what you get in different places in the country is quite different to what you would be used to in your own hometown. I mean, like for us city dwellers, what can we find that hasn't been kind of polluted by car exhaust fumes and stuff? You know, we've got to take that into account as well.
Yeah, well, look, the plants are the same, Melanie, wherever you go. I've just did a month in Cape Town. I found everything that I can find at home here in the Midlands and a few extra things because the biome is a bit different. So there's a bit of a shift, but there's a big core of plants that are exactly the same all over South Africa. So that's my book covers all over South Africa, but it actually doesn't even stop at South Africa. It's all over the world. They're cosmopolitan. In Tokyo, London, New York, you're going to find exactly the same things. And I know people say, oh, but what about the dog paths and what about the exhaust fumes? But to be honest, if you're eating anything from a supermarket, you are getting all sorts of unknown toxins that I would take my chances with dog wee, to be perfectly honest. I mean, really, you know, I mean, you don't question what they're doing to that broccoli. Nobody questions it, but it's pretty horrible things they're doing. So, you know, maybe not the middle of a very busy highway, but also the plants are very clever. They're metabolizing, synthesizing, you know, the point of weeds is to heal the earth. That's what these pioneer plants are doing that all the time. They are just racing along where humans have disrupted things, and they are doing the healing work. So they are mining minerals from deep below and changing the toxic things that are in that land and healing it and making it better. Well, maybe those plants are good for us too, because we are living there. So we need that healing as well, just as much. Yeah, so I'm not paranoid about that sort of thing. I collect most of my food on the verges of the streets. Look, Howick is a small town, and you know, I'm not at the truck stop, but yeah, I'm not entirely sure. You know, this is a classic foraging thing. Don't collect on dog paths, don't collect on the highway. But nah, I don't know. I just wonder if the nutrients, the benefits don't somehow outweigh an occasional dodgy thing you get.
Well, just be a little bit more circumspect about where you're walking, I think, is the way to go. But I mean, are more people getting into this as well? I mean, the whole thing about eating local is something we should all be looking at. And I mean, it is much easier in a small town, unless you know where your local markets are, say if you live in a big city, and then you can say, right, where was this sourced? And there are some people who are in the area who will put together boxes of food for others. But if you wanted to get into doing it yourself, I mean, obviously you need to know what you're kind of like selling people, and how likely are people to buy weeds from you?
Well, they do buy a lot of my pickles and cordials and that sort of thing. So when I've transformed the crazy abundance into a pesto or a pickle, then I do manage to sell that. At our local markets, people do sell things like amaranth. I've sold lamb's quarters quite a bit. Blackjack, you see, the thing is, it's just growing everywhere, so people generally don't want to buy it. But in a more urban environment, I know in Johannesburg, these things are becoming more and more available now in bunches. So I think it's going to grow. If you're not prepared to go out and forage in the street, it's just getting more and more available. So yeah, I think people, there was a big shift in COVID, Melanie. Before that, I was definitely seen as the very weird old weed lady. And then during COVID, I started posting every day when people were locked down. I thought, well, let me just tell them something they can eat every day. So I had an experience on slow food, a slow food Airbnb experience, where I'd take people for walks and give them a little lunch, a little picnicky lunch. But I got tourists and foreigners, and you know, I was, or some Joburg people. I mean, it was not normal around here. Then in COVID, it shifted and everybody said, please, will you teach us? Please, will you teach us? So then I did start doing local workshops, which were much less expensive, hosting many more lunches. And now literally, I mean, half of Howick has been on one of my weed walks, and all on the coast. I mean, I go up and down the KwaZulu-Natal coast. I've been in the Free State. I'm coming to Gauteng next year in February. I've been in the Cape, I've been in the Karoo, I've been all over the place now teaching people. So I think COVID did make people think differently about food and medicine and how they can live more simply. There are a lot of people made shifts in that time. And so that was quite useful for me, because now the bulk of my income comes from teaching people how to eat. I like to call it uncultivated food. Because weeds, as you said in the beginning, have quite a poor reputation. And so if we call it uncultivated food, that is the food that's just growing all on its own, waiting for you to eat it. So I prefer that term.
Look, I go around scrumping. When it's mulberry season, I am the person who is putting purple fingers up on social media every single day. And I'm sitting and people look at us and I'm like, this is free food and it's really, really healthy. Why are you not taking advantage of this? And I mean, I love the fact that so many people have put out their pavement gardens for people to get instead of just trying to grow plants and, like, you know, flowers. But then it's also like, what kind of weeds are we talking about? I mean, you keep talking about blackjacks. What on earth, firstly, do you do with blackjacks? And secondly, are these all indigenous weeds or is it a lot of stuff which has come from other places, like cosmos, for instance?
Yeah, exactly. They are all like cosmos. So blackjack and cosmos are actually the same family. They are all invasive plants, almost all of them. So I also call myself an invasivore because that's what I eat a lot of.
You're eating all the invasive plants. Invasive plants,
yeah. So I think there's nothing we can do about these invasive plants. You know, I've spent a lot of my life trying to clear invading plants from grasslands and edges of forest and all the rest and waterways. It's actually, we're not winning these wars. We're really not winning. And so, I still do. There's some plants that I really don't want them just spreading over the grassland, of course. But in your garden and in urban areas where things are transformed beyond recognition already, what is the point? We're not going to get rid of them. They're mostly ground covers. They're at least covering the soil where otherwise it might just be bare because whatever was originally there is gone, long gone. Mm. And of course, you can spend a lot of effort trying to restore a landscape to what was originally there. But when do we draw the line? Was the original landscape when I was 13, or was it in 1805 or 1652? Or was it when? When do we decide that was the pristine landscape? So, you know, I think what we're really aiming at is biodiversity. The problem with invasive plants is that it often smothers all the biodiversity. So there's only one kind left. But there is no way in hell that you are going to rid the verges of ribwort, which is a plantain species, and wild lettuce. Those are just getting more prolific by the year. And I think it's also a lot to do with climate change. I think it's a carbon-rich environment, so broadleaf plants are favored, whereas grasses are in trouble because they evolved in a low carbon period. So the broadleaf plants are sucking it all up, going, oh, yay, this is perfect. It's warmer. So they're like, oh, this is perfect as well. We love this climate. So I think we're not going to get rid of them. So we might as well eat them. It certainly makes more sense than plowing up a new field to plant with Swiss chard. And
disturbing the soil as well.
That's disturbing. So now we're not disturbing anything. Those plants are carrying on and they're mining the minerals, as I said before. And also, now that I pay a lot of attention to the weeds, I see that there's a succession. So one year, we'll go back to blackjack. We mentioned that. There's just blackjack everywhere. But the next year, it's a bit different. There's fleabane. Now there's fleabane everywhere. And then the next year, it's different. And there's kind of succession, almost as one thing does its job of healing, of replacing whatever minerals were lost in that soil, magnesium or potassium. And then the next year, it changes. And the next year changes. And I also see how some things are becoming more prolific and other things are becoming less so. So I actually think we don't know what's going on with the world. We really, really don't know what's happening on the planet. So they're there. Let's eat them. I mean, it's got to be better for you.
How do you eat a blackjack? I mean, I'm just sitting and thinking about this.
Oh, sorry, I didn't answer that.
They stick on you, and then everybody starts thinking about khaki boss and the smell of khaki boss. You know, how does one utilize that as food?
Okay, so blackjack, I mean, lots of people like it raw. I'm not crazy about it raw. I like it cooked. I prefer it cooked.
Is it the leaves?
The leaves. So I know some chefs are using the seeds as a flash, frying them as a trendy garnish, but I think that's a step too far personally. But the leaves, so you want to pick the fresh young leaves, and they are fabulous stir fried. I love to stir fry them with an onion or some garlic, a chili and some tomatoes. That is absolutely delicious. And you serve that with polenta or pasta or just a big bowl on its own. Add some nuts or add some peanut butter in. And that's a quite a traditional food in Africa to eat it that way. And it really is very, very delicious. A lot of people now are making blackjack tea. And apparently, it's antiseptic and anti-inflammatory. So the anti-inflammatory properties are being used a lot in cancer treatment. So a lot of people are using it. I mean, I haven't got scientific research to prove that, but I'm just saying, in traditional healing, it's used quite a lot. And I mean, I know in other places, like in Malawi, somebody has told me that they actually pick the tops off. And so that the side shoots grow, you can imagine it's sort of coppicing out the sides. And then those taste even nicer than the top leaves. So, you know, in Malawi, they're not farming blackjack, but they know how to manage it so that they're getting the most deliciousness and the most nutrients. And I know in Vietnam, they grow it as a crop. Blackjack is a crop in fields. Harvest it in bunches, or if it goes to the market. So you see, I think we can learn a lot from other cultures. Our little suburban thing, this all seems very cool and a bit weird and a bit wacky. But actually, I mean, who's to say what is food? Like, you mean if it's wild lettuce or lettuce? So we say it's wild lettuce, but it's actually the same family, and it's like the cousin. And I think the lettuce you pick on the pavement, the verges, tastes a lot nicer than any lettuce you can buy, because, well, our lettuce is all hydroponically grown. So it's got no nutrients. It's got very little flavor. But somewhere in the world, that plant is lettuce, not what we call cos and butter lettuce and all the rest. So, yeah, I think it's very interesting.
Well, and it's also
tea,
a case of like... teas are a lot... like things like amaranth, and it will, you know, I know about that from obviously like people like Jane Griffiths, who brought out also, this is what you should grow in your garden. So the local food stuff that used to be the foods that people would eat before the advent of, I mean, I just still, I'm fascinated how the Italians, what did they used to eat before anybody went to South America, you know? Because everything came from there, you know. No onions, no potatoes, no tomatoes.
They ate artichokes.
Artichokes. But Maroc itself, I mean, there's so many different things that can be classified as Maroc, not just your Swiss chard or your spinaches, but the amaranth leaves, what else is there?
The imbilikitani, which is the lamb's quarters. But Maroc and imifino, Maroc is a Sesotho word and imifino is a Zulu word. That is just an umbrella term for wild greens. So it's any old, it's whatever you like. In terms of wild greens. And so I think people have, and marketing has probably done this, that people think Maroc is amaranth, but it's not. And amaranth has got many varieties, from low creeping ones to one with thorns, and those ones with the big, tall, red plumes of flowers on the top. So yeah, that's, Maroc really just means wild greens of any description.
And so of course, pumpkin leaves.
Absolutely, which are my favorite. Yeah, they're my absolute favorite. Yeah, pumpkin leaves.
But so, if somebody lives in Johannesburg, for instance, and they think, oh, I want to grow weeds, people are going to look at them like, what? Or where would you suggest that people can go, first of all, like in urban areas, to go and find these foodstuffs? And secondly, is there anybody who actually sells the weeds as seeds for people to grow at home?
Yeah, I think Living Seeds do sell quite a few varieties of wild greens. I think African Marmalade, Spiwe Sithole, she's got quite a lot of seed, I think. And otherwise, you know, you just buy cover crops. So farmers are using these plants more and more now as cover crops to heal the soil in between their rows of avocados or rows of mealies or whatever that it is they're growing. So that is definitely the trend now in regenerative agriculture. And so you can go, you can buy clover seed, you can buy vetch, you can buy amaranth, you know, there's loads of things you can buy. But those are agricultural sites. But you can definitely, I mean, I looked one up, I was amazed. You can buy amaranth, you can even buy plantain seed, which was just astonishing because it's everywhere. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me a bit more about your book. So you said the first one is a mnandi, which is tasty. And I mean, is that one still available to buy as well?
It is still available to buy, yes.
So you're self-published as well, hey?
Self-published, yeah, absolutely. It just suits my personality to be able to do everything myself. I'm lucky with my skill set that it was easy to design it and do, and I'm quite good at marketing. So it just made sense. I mean, if you want to be in bargain box, you get like 17 Rand. Well, that's a fib, but you get hardly any money in the end. And most people, I don't think, really are going to pick up these books on the exclusive shelf. I think you have to have a bit of an interest or know a bit about me, and then I'll get you excited about it. I don't think it's a, you know, if you have no interest at all in this, it's, I don't know that it'll leap off the shelf to you. I might do that after a while. Yeah, so then I did, and my Wild About Weeds book came about purely because I did all these workshops and I could see people were completely bamboozled by the end of it. It really, your light bulbs explode in your brain because it's a completely different way of thinking about things. And so they'd say, do a book. And I said, no, there's enough books in the world. We don't need, leave the trees in peace. And after a while, I realized, no, actually, it is a bit cruel to send people away with absolutely nothing, because then they're WhatsApping me forever. What is this? What is this? What is this? And so then I did that first Wild About Weeds, which also has got a lot of recipes in it. So it's got ways to use the things as well as information, how to find it and what
it's, that's
what
necessary. It's, I mean, we might have weeds, but we have no idea what to do with them. And I mean, how to use them, which part of the plant to use. So, I mean, there are certain books that you can get, you know, especially if you're growing garden vegetables and things like that. But this is slightly different. You need to know that you're not going to like have something poisonous.
Well, I don't know. Poisonous. There's so few things that really poisonous. But I think there are lots of books about foraging. There are just hundreds of books about foraging. So that's what I thought. I thought we really don't need another one. But I realized we want something South African, so that it's familiar. The language is familiar. The photographs have got the same sort of light. People, and it's got the isiZulu name and the Sesotho name. And so it just feels more familiar to people. And so, you know, I understand. And in the end, and I had so much fun doing the book, and it's lovely. And I sold out in 5 months, much to my astonishment. So I had to reprint it. And then in the meanwhile, people were saying, oh, your book is lovely, but I can't take it with me anywhere, because it's too big. And so then everyone said, we'll do a little guide. So then I did a little pocket guide, which I launched just a few months ago. And that is proving very popular, because that you literally can pop in your pocket. And so you can go for a walk around the neighborhood or on a hike or to the beach or wherever you're going, and you can see what to eat. It hasn't got recipes. It hasn't got nearly the same amount of information, but it tells you you can eat these plants.
Yeah. So you need to have both of the books, in other words. You need to have the small one and you need to have the big one.
Of course you do. Absolutely. Essential.
And that's what we're trying to do for you, is to make sure that people actually, I just think it's absolutely fascinating. I'm always looking for, you know, having published a book myself on garden design is a bit different, and, you know, getting styles right. So for me, it's always, I want to find books which are completely different to what I'm used to doing. And that's why I'm finding this completely fascinating. And speaking to authors who have been chefs or part of the slow food movement or whatever, who are getting into gardening, that so many people have done, because they want to grow the food that they want to eat. And this is what it basically is about. You need to be able to do that for yourself as well. So if people do want to get your books, how do they go about finding it?
I think the easiest way, it is in shops and all over the country. It's in quite a lot of shops in Cape Town. It's in Love Books in Johannesburg. It's in Durban, in the Karoo. But I think the easiest is to look at my website, which is plantabundance.co.za. There's a list there of all the bookshops, but I post out most days. I post copies around the country with one of the couriers or Paxi or something. So that's a very easy way of getting it. Otherwise, you can see the list of suppliers on my website.
And So, I mean, there are three books then. There's Nandi and Wild About Weeds and the small pocket version.
Yeah, which is called Edible Weeds.
Edible Weeds. I love this. I mean, you know, we should be using everything. I mean, in the times of food insecurity, which is going to become more and more a problem as we go past time, to know what you can actually say, I'm not going to go hungry because I know what to eat. Just not the fungi. Stay away from fungi unless you know what it is.
Well, yes, I agree. Stay away from fungi. But on the shout on the back of my book, somebody I really admire who is growing a lot of food, but he says it's Mvuongoya, who's an academic and a farmer, and he says the deliberate erasure of our knowledge is a calamity. In this bountiful part of the world, nobody should be poor or hungry. And I agree entirely. You know, I do see people foraging that may be not shopping at Woolworths, but yeah, there really is a lot more food available than we think all around us. I mean, you can't harvest grain. I mean, you're still going to need some of those carbohydrates and staples. You know, I'm starting to learn more and more now about the tubers you can eat of all sorts of things.
And things like that. Yeah,
Madumbi's, cannas. Apparently cannas. You know what cannas are.
Yes, you can eat canna.
Yeah, you can eat canna, you know, so.
And those are tulip bulbs if you don't have onions.
dahlias.
Yes, you can eat dahlias.
You can eat. Yeah. So, you know, I think we just, you know, some people think that we've had all this knowledge deliberately erased, as Mvu says, but I'm not quite sure if it's deliberate or if it's just humans going for the easy option. So if somebody...
Exactly, that's what it is.
You know, potatoes are easy. Let's just eat the potatoes rather than go hunting along the road for cannas. I can understand. I mean, we do still have Woolworths.
Well, I mean, look, it would do a double duty then if people went down to riverbeds and they saw Canna indica and pulled those out, you know, and like, you know, the ones that are invasives and you can eat them. Why not, you know? And the same thing with the mulberries. Free food, people. Let's go and do it, you know. Get those berries if you see a sambucus, like, flowering somewhere on the side. Use the flowers in a pancake or make jam. It's grow your own drugs. Ooh. There we go. It's the best thing that everybody should be doing.
Okay, I'll do my next book. Thank you for the title. But the other thing is, when we're foraging like this, you started off asking about invasives. Now, because they're invasive species, we're not actually in direct competition with the monkeys and the buck and the butterflies. You know, these are extra things. So I think we can forage with more ease for invasive plants. Whereas if you're foraging for indigenous edibles, that's a whole different set of ethics there because you're in direct competition. And I mean, I've heard awful stories about marula and even mapani worms apparently now. There are no mapani worms around. So, you know, things can get trendy and that is always a bit of a problem. So these weeds, I reckon, are the original superfoods. This is superfood. Forget all those things in the health shop. Leave all those plants in peace. Just eat the weeds.
Eat the weeds. I'm 100% behind you. I'm going to go and have a look and see what I can find in my area down near the river. I think that's a great idea. Okay, so that book then, those books, shall I say, at www.plantabundance.co.za. And of course, learn how you can give something back to the environment while keeping yourself healthy. And it costs, as you said, nothing. Nikki, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we will keep on finding out. Let us know when you're going to do another book or when you're coming up to Johannesburg, and we'll put it out there so people can come and learn more face to face.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it. If you have any questions, remember you can always get hold of us, either myself through melanie@solidgold.co.za, or if you want to, you can also get hold of the author herself at her website address. Just get out there, get into the garden. Get a good book. You'll have everything you need in life.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.